I was calling Dr. Nate here, who I know is a big car guy. I'm like, you know, Dr. Nate, what would you do with an extra $100,000 in your bank account to go? What kind of car would you buy?
What kind of car would you
buy? It starts getting.
I love cars too. I love cars.
Oh, good. Oh, that we need a whole nother session for that.
We've gone down a whole rabbit hole for that one.
You know, Drew likes cars too. Drew and I talk cars. It must be an IU thing.
Yeah, maybe. you highlight a good point, and I know there's, you know, sometimes certain doctors might get scarred by certain times they've reached out to patients, because you know, I know one of the concerns from doctors in that psychology that you're talking about is it's not just calling Mrs. Smith saying, hey, sorry, you know, you just paid $750, but you owe 12 more, is not only losing Mrs. Smith, but losing her entire family and anybody she's talked to. And I think some docs are scarred at that, you know, that cost benefit, but they're kind of negating how much every time this $5, this $10 adds up every time these things happen. And then that's where I think they lose sight of that big number that you're talking about, where if you get to the end and you're like, here was your opportunity cost here on this, like, they might be saying a different thing, like, oh, wow. Yeah. You know, it's like, they don't need $5 or $10 here, but if you say, would you like an extra $100,000 to your practice? Most of them are going to say, yes, tell me how I do it.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Podcast on iCode Media. Today, I'm excited to have a conversation with Dr. Nate McLean and Dan Dion. Dan, I probably butchered that, but you can correct me in just a second. We're going to talk about some of the complexities that exist within all the managed vision care, managed medical care that occurs within a practice's revenue cycle, and some of the stuff that you have to do to get engaged and to understand what's going on in your practice to deliver the care that you need to deliver has gotten exceedingly complicated in most of our practices. So I've asked Dr. McLean to come on and discuss kind of the generalities of what's going on, and Dan as well. And, you know, some of the tips and techniques that we can use as a practice to try to streamline that approach. And then also, you know, they've found a way and a pathway so that we can minimize our staff effort on that and maximize our ability to deliver the care that patients need. So with that, Dr. McLean, we were just talking offline about a little bit about some of the people that we know. Dr. Drew Bateman is one of my closest friends, and you know him from school, from optometry school, and he's had a lot of good things to say about you. So I'm glad we're able to finally connect. So tell me a little bit about kind of your experience in gathering information to try to deliver care that patients need, and kind of the hiccups that you see in many practices related to that.
Yeah, a lot of mine started with when initially I was practicing, and when we're seeing patients day in and day out, I always say we're sometimes too busy in the trenches to understand all the issues affecting the other aspects of our practice, or we just don't have the time or energy to focus on it. And that was one of the things I stepped away from seeing patients in around 2016 to just manage the day-to-day operations. And that was when I knew these things that affected my office and the industry as a whole really started to drive me insane. And you know exactly what you're talking about around vision insurance and medical insurance, all of those pain points, even from that initial phone call of patients calling in, and I'm sure we've all heard it, as they say, yeah, I have vision insurance, but I have no idea who it's through. So then the staff are either taking more time on that call, trying to search all the portals, trying to figure out, you know, who was their payer, and what is their actual eligibility, or sometimes they're not even getting that information on the call, and then they have to remember to do it at a later time and then reach back out if the patient's not eligible. So it is a difficult thing that we're tasked with, and the patients put that on us as the office and saying, hey, you figure this out. I know I have it. Let me know what I have, and let me know if I'm eligible. And we've, as an industry, kind of taken that on our shoulders, but it does create a lot of operational problems and a lot of time, a lot of wasted staff hours in my mind on those repetitive tasks.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the other thing that like the worst case scenario is patients come in and they thought they had one insurance. They've made the appointment. You've verified everything that you can internally that they've given you. And then it turns out the vision plan that they had, you're not participating in it. Now you've lost the ability to ever recoup that time again. And then the other thing is that can be challenging is just, you know, the patients, and you brought this up, is the patient's expectation, rightly or wrongly, is that they like their insurances, whatever the insurance is, they like it, but, and they own it. The reality is they own it, but they expect you to understand all the little subtle nuances of it and to know that, that whether or not like all the different types of insurances that they have. And you've seen too, that medical plans will sort of kind of lump in a vision plan underneath them. And you won't really know if you're a provider on that vision plan by looking at the patient's card. We've seen this even with our dental insurance, where our dental insurance is under the umbrella of another major medical plan for our patient, for our office. But you would never know who's administering that dental plan. And so it's confusing to patients. And it's frustrating for practices. So talk about kind of just best practices. Let's say I am going to do this on my own. Dan or Dr. McClain, what are kind of best practices that I ought to be considering when a patient comes in? What are the kind of those things that you think about, like at the very least, do this to try to minimize this headache? My patients with macular degeneration want clear and succinct recommendations from me related to products and solutions that can benefit their long-term ocular health and vision. To do this for my patients, I need to be confident that what I'm recommending will have a benefit to them. And that's why my supplement of choice is MacuHealth. MacuHealth is specifically formulated and clinically proven to rebuild and maximize macular pigment over a lifetime. This results in enhanced visual performance and aids in the treatment and prevention of age-related macular degeneration. I've discussed carotenoid absorption on this podcast with Dr. Nolens and Stringham, and MacuHealth uses a patented process called micro-micelle technology. And this technology is clinically proven to increase carotenoid concentrations at the target tissue and deliver the highest level of bioavailability studied to date. MacuHealth has been great for my patients. We really feel like we have the ability to help those patients in all categories of macular degeneration. If you're not utilizing MacuHealth for your patients, check it out for yourself by contacting your MacuHealth representative. Young and emerging presbyopes can be tricky. These patients want and need additional help at near, but they can be resistant to solutions that create even mild distance blur. The MyDay multifocal lens has been great for our presbyopic patients. It allows those patients to transition into a multifocal more easily. We've had this lens now for long enough that we've been able to see how simple transitions can be from an adaptation standpoint, from lower ad designs to higher ad designs. The MyDay multifocal material is Cooper Vision's softest one-day hydrogel lens and features Aquaform technology combining the unique balance of high oxygen permeability with natural wettability in one material. The result is a highly breathable lens that keeps our patients' eyes looking clear, white, and healthy. So if you haven't started utilizing MyDay multifocal in your practice, I'd encourage you to reach out to your Cooper Vision representative to get started.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of those best practices that you're talking about is trying to get that information at that initial call, because there's so much friction that it's involved. If you don't get it at the initial call, then let's say that patient's not eligible. Let's say, you know, you're going to call out the patient's more than likely at work and you're going to leave a message that says, "Hi, Mrs. Smith, we apologize. You're not eligible for an exam, or you're not eligible for a frame." Then in that patient's mind, a lot of times they might hear that message and just be like, "Oh, I'm not coming in. I'm not eligible." They don't call back. So that appointment never gets canceled. Then that is a no-show. And then that is that lost opportunity for the doc. So I think one of the most vital things is getting that information at that initial call. So, you know, the best place to, you know, are you in network? Are you out of network? Do they need to be added to the schedule and all of those things, so you can have that initial conversation, because there's so much friction involved if you don't get it at that initial call.
Yeah.
Dan, what's the next step? What do you think about that?
Yeah, thanks. It's actually something Dr. Nate and I were chatting about right before we jumped on, of like, you can nail that first part, get everything done right, make sure they're eligible, make sure they come in, they have a good experience at check-in, they're not sitting for 20 minutes while you're searching, you can do all that. But then you drop the ball somewhere down the line in terms of the entire patient experience, and you still lost that patient. So it's not just about making sure you're ready for when they show up, but also through checkout, through that entire patient experience. And you know, you can, like I just said, you can nail the first couple of parts, but you have to kind of be perfect all the way across the entire life cycle of that patient, because then you're going to lose somebody. Say you know, through the optical checkout, you accidentally undercharge someone by, let's just throw a random number up, $12. You're going to make that phone call and say, hey, I need your credit card again. I accidentally undercharged you by $12. One, that's a really embarrassing phone call to have to make. And two, you may get that $12, but you may lose that patient down the road because you kind of look sloppy. You look like you don't have your stuff together.
Yeah. And there's nothing more frustrating than that situation, that exact situation. Or, you know, we build this to this insurance, but you know, the wrong information was given to them. And that's a reflection on us. Even though the patient may have given us the wrong information, it winds up being a reflection on us. You know, this is giving me an idea about kind of another conversation. I had a conversation a few years back with just a social event with a guy who he was selling software to hospitals to do all of these sorts of things. And one of the things that they were doing within the hospital system strategically was the hospital system would actually know, not only would they aggregate all this information, but I bring this up because individual independent optometry offices or even larger group optometry offices are missing these steps, right? But these larger entities are seeing the value of what you're talking about. And so what the hospital system was doing was they would understand all this stuff. So a patient comes in the emergency room, they would get all the information that goes on. And they would find every single plan that the patient has. And some patients would have two or three plans. They would have no idea that they had those plans because the wife was enrolled with X, Y, and Z. And then strategically, what the hospital would do, which is, you know, is great business, it's seemingly nefarious at first, but they would wait until that to bill. They would wait just the amount of time to bill where, like, I would want to bill right away, but the hospital saying, like, we know we can wait, we can watch what this provider, so the provider pool, maybe you need anesthesia, maybe the surgeon bills, the anesthesiologist bills, and then you get two or three down the road, and they just know if we wait just a little bit, we're going to get everything from the insurance company. We're not going to have to wait to rebalance bill the patient for stuff that was gone to their deductible. So that's what really kind of aligned me to say, like, this is a very smart and strategic thing for people to be doing. We should be considering doing these types of things in our practices because one is it all the things you laid out. It gives a patient a better clinical experience, a better patient experience. It binds them to the practice. That's the most important thing. But two, it's actually good business because we minimize other headaches about trying to chase down that $12 bill or the $15 bill. And you know, you know as well as I know is that if I've got to put something in the mail, it's going to cost us at minimum 15 bucks. You know, not just because of the postage, but the person doing the work.
Yeah. Well, even worse than that, like, you know, me and my team talk to hundreds of doctors every single month. Most of them don't even go after that. So, you know, you're talking to doctors that are not, I couldn't even tell you the amount of people we talked to that just let $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 just go uncollected because they'd rather keep the patient. The worst one I heard was $175,000 and they were okay with it. And I'm like, you have to let me help you. But like, they're just okay with it as part of their business because they'd rather protect the patient coming in for repeats and keep coming back as a lifelong patient than trying to collect that small dollar revenue. But it adds up every single patient.
That's interesting, Dan. I want to pause there because I've noticed the same thing. Yeah. You know, within iCode, what we do is we help doctors understand the value of their services. And I see this exact same thing.
Yeah.
But if you were to take that, so like that's potential money to them, right? Like what's really interesting to me is when I show them lost value in undervaluing their services, they're kind of like, nah, yeah, it's money I didn't have. You know what I mean? And that seems to be what they tell you as well, but there's some sort of psychological thing that I can't wrap my mind around that says, like, if I were to come to that same doctor and go to their bank account and take $175,000 out of their bank account, be like, nope, it's not yours, it's mine. They would immediately, like, everything, like bells go off, they'd be calling the police, you know. But like the fact that they just kind of never had the money in the first place. And they're okay. And I understand, like I'm the same way, like not exactly, but you know, $5 or $6 here, you're kind of, but like it adds up and it's such a big deal.
Yep. And you know,
so what's the psychology? Do you have any more pinpoint on the psychology of that?
Yeah. I usually ask, you know, like, let's just play for an example. I was calling Dr. Nate here, who I know is a big car guy. Like, you know, Dr. Nate, what would you do with an extra $100,000 in your bank account to go, what kind of car would you buy?
What kind of car would you
buy?
It
starts getting.
I love cars too. I love cars.
Oh, good. Oh, that we need a whole nother session for that one.
We've gone down a whole rabbit hole for that one.
You know, Drew likes cars too. Drew and I talk cars. It must be an IU thing.
Yeah, maybe. you highlight a good point, and I know there's, you know, sometimes certain doctors might get scarred by certain times they've reached out to patients, because you know, I know one of the concerns from doctors in that psychology that you're talking about is it's not just calling Mrs. Smith saying, hey, sorry, you know, you just paid $750, but you owe 12 more, is not only losing Mrs. Smith, but losing her entire family and anybody she's talked to. And I think some docs are scarred at that, you know, that cost benefit, but they're kind of negating how much every time this $5, this $10 adds up every time these things happen. And then that's where I think they lose sight of that big number that you're talking about, where if you get to the end and you're like, here was your opportunity cost here on this, like they might be saying a different thing, like, oh wow. Yeah. You know, it's like they don't need $5 or $10 here, but if you say, would you like an extra $100,000 to your practice? Most of them are going to say, yes, tell me how I do it.
Yeah,
well, and I think it highlights the important part is that if you're okay losing that amount of money per patient, like individually, but you see the problem, it's really a procedural problem in the office. It's not necessarily like it's this person's fault per se. It's like, yeah, okay, Sally didn't collect the $12. It's on us, or we didn't run the numbers correctly. That's on us. I can get mad at Sally. But the reality is we just didn't have a good, my approach is we just didn't have a good enough process in place to prevent that in the first place. So I think we've set up the conversation well enough to say, all right, first of all, are there any other things, Dan, that I'm missing in this whole process that I should be thinking about just in general before we kind of dive into your solution and what you've seen Practice Pal help people with?
Yeah, of course. And you know, P word process, right? You know, it also comes with people, where we also talked a lot of doctors that are struggling to keep talent in their practice, and they're losing it, constantly retraining, constantly having to teach people how to do these things. And both of you can tell me far more than I could tell you how hard it is to train someone to make sure you don't underbill, so that someone does walk in where the insurance is already pulled and you know exactly what's on that snapshot and you know exactly what they're eligible for, so you're not creating a bad patient experience. So the other part, the big missing component of that, and it also takes a long time to train somebody to be, you know, a hawk to see these final details, these really small details that, you know, Dr. Nate would notice, but I wouldn't 2 weeks in. So that's the other big process that we help to, you know, let's say shorten the training time and make sure people are able to see these things before they happen.
I think there's one more I would just add as kind of an overarching thing, like you said, a pattern is, you know, you mentioned hospitals and things like that, and there are larger entities, larger groups that have business and technological advantages over the individual practitioner. But what I say is there is starting to be a lot of good technologies out there to level that playing field. And, you know, there used to only be two ways you could make more money, is that's see more patients or charge more per patient. But I do think technology gives us the advantage of being able to do more with less. And when I say less, I don't just mean firing, getting rid of staff, is like focusing on the staff doing the right things, not doing repetitive wasted tasks and things of that nature, that then they can be more profitable to the office in focusing on the things that are really important to the office. And I think that's kind of one of the big things where the individual offices now start to need to talk about or understand how technology can help them, and how investing in technology can really improve the overall profitability of the practice. And one thing I always joke, I always tell Dan, is like, technology doesn't quit. Technology doesn't call in sick. Like, there's a lot of these things that we all know how dealing with staff can sometimes be problematic. It can be lesser. It doesn't mean technology is always perfect and things of that nature, but across the board, when you compare staff to technology, there's a lot less issues a lot of times.
Yep. And the last thing on that before we move on is, like, we've been doing this same thing for so long, like the way we pull benefits, the way we run the optical shop. You have to have a behavioral change, and not just a process change. You have to reinforce it from you know, business owner seat of saying we have to be better, and I'm giving you these tools to make you better. And to Nate's point, like, these are always going to be here for you no matter who's in that day. So you also have to get people bought in on changing their behaviors, because that's what it's going to take to utilize this to the most beneficial point of it. So,
yeah, I think it's, so as a practice, you know, my parents started the practice. My mom was an optician. My dad was, is an optometrist, and he's retired now. And they've always kind of, their biggest thing always was service is, and a lot of us talk about that. And I know a lot of us do that. And one of the things that's really challenging in today's day and age is, how do you serve patients with all the complexities that go on in terms of billing and knowing who's, I mean, we talked about some of this as well, but about a year ago, it came to a head in my mind where I just felt like we were just not able to serve. There were so many barriers in our practice to pull our team away from people who are in the office. And so I kind of went on a mission of like, okay, how do I remove all the tasks, use as much technology as I possibly can that don't have to be done physically in the office to disrupt our patient flow and our patient care and our attention to patients. And I think we've done a pretty good job. I think we could do a better job still. I think there's also always these areas for improvement, but to try to get back to the roots of what we like to do, what we want to do, like, why did I go to optometry school? It was to take as good a care of patients as I possibly can take care of them. It wasn't to do all of this other stuff. Although I think this other stuff is interesting. So I'm all about simplifying things in our practice and moving things away that distract from the care that we can provide, so we can provide better care and give a better patient experience. So to that end, I think it's great. So Nate, you see this problem, and you say, we got to fix this better. We got to create the software that the hospitals are using for billing timing, but we got to do it for optometry. So tell me how Practice Pal fits in, and how I would use this as a practice.
Yeah, there's really kind of two components based on some things we've highlighted. One, you know, starts at that initial time of scheduling and verifying the eligibility and benefits and how much, you know, like we talked about, the time and frustration and miscommunication that can go in that. And so what we've done with Practice Pal is being able to automate that eligibility and verification process. The moment a patient's added to the schedule, we can simultaneously search all the major networks that you're in network with, or all the major payers that you're in network with, to populate the benefits, not only for the patient, but any other dependents as well. And another thing you talked about with having multiple plans, by us always searching those multiple plans, we also in about 5 to 10% of cases find additional plans that they didn't even know they had. Just because, like you said, sometimes a spouse has a plan through their employer that they didn't realize, and that becomes a big opportunity. It's a way to maximize the benefits for the patient, and it's a revenue opportunity for the office.
How do they respond to that? I mean, in general, when that occurs, do you have kind of a sense of, are most patients like, holy cow, really? Are they like, what's the response when you tell patients that?
Yeah, I mean, they're beyond excited, and most of the time, like I said, they didn't even know it. And I mean, we've even been at trade shows, and people in the optical market that we're running their eligibility for, they have multiple, like, we find it for people even in the industry, and there, you talk about barriers, and especially when we talk about managed vision care, medical, there's a lot of barriers and a lot of misunderstandings from the patient side that they just don't realize, you know, how the things work, what they have, all of those things. So it's a big hurdle and problem that we deal with almost every phone call.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, keep going, please. Keep going. I know I interrupted you.
That was kind of the initial beginnings of Practice Pal, was that very problem and everything that stemmed around that. The next kind of problem, and I have so many sheets, I was a very flow and process oriented person when I practiced, and it was the bottlenecks in the optical that drove me insane. I'm like, there's got to be a more efficient way. It's always backing up. It's like Dan mentioned, there's always a bad patient experience, even though we did everything right up until that point. And so, and you were talking about just that patient's experience and where other industries are. And I don't even just mean hospitals. I'm talking, you go into Apple, you go into Nordstrom's, things like that. that retail experience, and I feel like managed vision has found a way to make the retail experience not as enjoyable. Enjoyable for the patient.
Well, and I want to point this out too. Yeah, I want to point that out too, because you know, one of the things it boggles my mind at how why when a patient when you decide to purchase a new set of AirPods, you go in, it's as simple as they grab this, I tap my card and I'm gone. And that process has become so complicated. And I, you know, the conspiracy part of me wonders about that. But they've, you know, it's almost like when you go into your phone store to buy a phone. Phones are almost as bad. It's like, I just want to buy a new phone. Like, I'll even pay for it. I don't need it to be on a contract. I just pay for it. No, it's got to do these things. And it's as bad. Well, it's worse for us. And so that patient experience is like, there should be no reason. If we know the information, we know your benefits, all you have to do, it should be as simple as you find the frame you like. We give you the recommendations on what the best thing is for you. And at that time we've taken measurements and boom, you're tapping your card and you're on your way. So that's a huge problem. I know you've already addressed it, right? But I see that same thing in our practice. And I want to know how your process can streamline that with Practice Pal.
Yeah. And one of those things, like you talked about, you use the word barriers. A barrier for me is a patient says, you know, oh, I want this, or how much is this? And the staff goes over, they get on a calculator, they sit across the computer, you can't see what they're looking at. They just tell you a number, and the patients already have a lack of understanding of how their plans work, and that creates barriers. So one of my goals was to minimize that barrier. So with us being able to automate the copay calculations, like you talked, get rid of the ask me this, then let me get on the calculator, let me write on a scratch piece of paper, and I'll tell you an answer, is on a tablet, an iPad, to work side by side to say, oh, let me add that frame. Here's how much the frame is. And you show it to them instead of they're just trusting whatever number you come up with. And it's kind of, like I said, I wanted to mimic the sales experience that exists all over the world that we're just behind the times. And I just kept thinking there has to be a better way. And so one of my biggest pain points in my office, and I knew affected everybody, was just the manual copay calculations and that sales process. I wanted it to be more of a side-by-side experience than a you sit over there, I sit over here type of thing. And it's just a tough battle, but it became, when it's stressful for the staff, they're not really focused on the best recommendations for the patient. They're worried about trying to get these numbers right so they don't get it wrong, but they're missing out on the true benefit of that experience. And then, like you said, that affects the service model that you're offering. And I wanted to eliminate the things that I felt took away from my staff's ability to connect with the patient, offer them products and things that would benefit their everyday life.
So can I actually build in like packages that I want specifically on my patients? Like I can do that automated. And so, you know, then again, we make it as straightforward as possible. Like, we've recommended this, this is what we've got. And then the staff doesn't have to build that every time. It's already pre-built based on our
preferences. We don't have anything directly on packages, and I'll explain why. And we're going to work through some things, but it actually requires some changes in the industry. Most of the time as doctors, we can build packages because we're trying to make things simpler because of all the problems. Because right now with what we have with Practice Pal, it works a la carte. Like, you can select lenses, lens options, frames. We can do that in about a 5 times faster experience. So having packages is not really as needed as what we thought it was. But the reason packages kind of break down from a copay calculation standpoint is you have a package is the individual items, your poly, your AR, your progressive, things of that nature. Most of the time we create a package that's less than the individual items. And not to get too complex on the copay calculation, sometimes a charge is 80% of the usual and customary. To know exactly what the copay of that is, we have to know the individual retail of each individual item. And if those don't add up to the package, then we have an issue. So we have the ability to do packages, but only if the sub items add up to the total. If they don't, then it becomes a complication of knowing where to allocate the money within a package. So it's crazy that we're talking this nuanced of a conversation, but that's the life we live right now.
And that's the important stuff, again, is that people want to know the why behind how these things work, you know, and the why. So I see this a lot, like I've already gotten a whole bunch of like emails over the last couple of days about, hey, Chris, ask about this, ask about that. I'm curious about this, or I'm playing with this. And this is, so like, this is the real conversation. Like, first of all, we don't use Practice Pal, although I'll tell you, the more I do of these, the more money I spend in my practice, because because I'm like, oh yeah, we need this. So we wind up trying it out. So I think I'll tell you right away that I'm going to have you set up a demo, Dan, with, or somebody on your team set up a demo with my team, so we can evaluate it. Because again, I think we've figured out a lot of these things. We do them well, but we could do them better. And so my point in saying that is, like, these are the things that people want to know. Like, you could do an advertisement, but people have seen the advertisement, right? I want to see what, like, the why behind why you can't build practice like packages makes sense to me, right? It seems simpler. But because we have to break all these things out when we bill them, and that's what we have. Like we might have a package in our office that's easy to administer to the patient, but by the time we bill it, now it's got to be broken down again, and that's challenging. So I understand what you're saying there, and I don't view that as you're not doing a good job. It's like, these are just the complexities of the entire situation,
right?
And if I can simplify any piece of that, it's really helpful. So so then tell me, like, walk me through the process of kind of start to finish of, all right, patient calls. Where do I do? What happens in the back end? Like, what's all getting triggered? And then how does that cycle work?
We have integrations with most of the major EHRs. So from that standpoint, a patient calls in, the staff adds them to the schedule. In the background, Practice Pal leverages that name and date of birth to go out, simultaneously search. If they put any medical information in there, we can provide medical, copay, office visit, deductibles, things of that nature as well. But we automate that process in the background. We populate a result in Practice Pal. In addition, we take a copy of their snapshot from the plan, from what you used to print out from iMed, VSP, things of that nature. And we put that in the patient's documents and images file. So it lives there. You have that updated. And then what we do, we give them a configurable time. Let's say if they say 4 days out, we usually like to verify before the patients come in. We can refresh that result to make sure that the results don't change. And then we also refresh the results 24 hours before the appointment, because we need to make sure that because there are times where, you know, a patient schedules a month out and what they were eligible for then is not necessarily what they're eligible for when they come in. They might have purchased contacts in between now and when they scheduled. And a lot of times, those are things that slip through the cracks, that they just look at their initial eligibility, assume that's everything they're eligible for. So we kind of cover the office's backs in making sure that we have the most up-to-date version of their eligibility, that it hasn't changed. So that's kind of step one. And then with our integrations, we're able to automatically pull the inventory from the EHR. So you're not having to build a whole inventory of 1,000 products in Practice Pal. We pull that from the EHR as those get updated in the EHR. They get updated in Practice Pal, and then we do a mapping process to where we say, here's all your inventory items. We map that to our master list of items, which then knows all the billing properties for VSP, Spectera, Davis, iMed, MVA, Involve. And then we're able to then, as you select an item in real time, we already know what the patient's out-of-pocket is based on the plan. We don't have to select an item and then it tells us the number. We know across the entire inventory what the out-of-pocket is. So that makes the frame shopping experience so much better, because now patients go, they try on a frame, they try it on, first thing they say is, well, how much is this with my insurance? Then the staff walks over, they do their calculation, they tell them, where now we can just put in the frame name, we can put in the model number, and we immediately say, oh, that's a $380 frame, but it's only $170 with your plan. It just makes that sales process so much more natural and run more smoothly than it currently does. And kind of talking about that flow of like the in and out. With Practice Pal, we give the ability to go through the sales process, know what their out-of-pocket is. We can create a detailed receipt that then you can collect the payment on the spot and the patient's out the door. Another part that I hated is you go through everything. The patient agrees upon everything. They think they're done. They sit there for another 15 to 20 minutes while the staff finalizes the order, then they create an invoice and the patient's sitting there saying, hey, I've got to get back to work. What's taking so long? The staff is sweating bullets trying to get through that process. And like you said, from going into an Apple store, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't resonate with patients because they've never, they don't, it's friction and they're not used to that anywhere else. And so it's trying to find those points that we're trying to eliminate those barriers.
Well, I'm sure that like big companies that are big retail optical companies, and there's probably one that's coming right to your mind right away, that they mostly operate on a cash pay model because they're offering, you know, a pair of glasses and frames and lenses for, you know, a very low price. And they're dealing mainly with cash. And so they're making that process super simple for the patient, as simple as it possibly can be. The process that we can't function in because the patient expects us to accept their insurance and bill their insurance, et cetera. And so, you know, you almost wonder if the, if there's the ability for them to win, not just on price, but on the experience as well. It's just a completely different experience where the reality is, as you know, is if they're getting equivalent things and, you know, they're still paying basically what they're paying for us, maybe even more in many cases, even if they weren't paying, even if they didn't have the benefit of using insurance in our practices. And so, so like that, that's a really big deal to make that experience better in my mind. A couple things I've got questions about within that process is first, you know, from a, we're talking a lot about vision plans, but from a medical standpoint, what I've noticed on medical cards, you know, my staff tells me that there's almost no copay information. It won't tell you what the copays are anymore. So does your system tell me copay, deductible, how much of that has been met? How much information am I going to get on that patient's medical insurance?
Yeah, we can give you individual deductibles, family deductibles, specialist office visit, copay. And if the medical, and a big thing that we haven't really talked about is like the routine vision exams through medical, not through the medical, vision,
yeah,
that they,
big deal,
you know, subcontract out. And that's where we're able to show that when they share it. And this is one of these misconceptions that medical, and there's X12 is like the back end of all clearing houses and things, and how everything from medical and the information that they're required to show versus they can show. Unfortunately, routine vision exams through medical, their medical payers are not required to show that electronically. Some do, some don't. So we always try to give that to offices, but it is frustrating that there are still times you have to call in and lo and behold, they do have it. So there's still these barriers that we're battling against. But
yeah, so look, yeah, I think that's important. I that actually, that you brought that up, but that's one of the things that a listener asked about yesterday was, you know, this is one of the points of frustration I have, is I still have to do this. And I always think it's interesting that when we incorporate new technology into a practice or anything that's brand new, what oftentimes will happen is people will say, like, they'll find the one thing that technology doesn't do, and then it ruins the whole thing. It's like, wait a minute, but look at all the other stuff that it does that we like in my simplification of the practice. I mean, again, over this last year, we've got great staff. I've got a great team, but like I hear when stuff doesn't work, but I never hear is like, I've hired these other people, like these other virtual people we've got, you know, that are working for our practice, that are allowing you to do all these other things. And when this system doesn't work, I hear about like, well, you know, such and such happens. Like this is, it's like, no, but yeah, but you know, I had to answer phone calls. I had to answer a ton of phone calls today. Something must not be working. It's like, well, let's say that Ignacio has answered 90% of the phone calls, and now you're only answering 10. You were answering 100% before. Or actually what we found is that they weren't answering 100%. They were answering 50% before. But the point is like, it's always easy to find like, well, this one thing. So my point is in saying that is like, it's companies that find those things work on them. And it seems to me that it's like, well, here's still a problem. Like, we'd like to give you all the information electronically, but there are situations you're still going to have to call on it. But right, we're working through that. We're going to try to figure that out. What else do you find? What else do you find that's the case? Like, what else are you seeing? Like, okay, we can get copays, we can get deductibles. Can you tell me how close they are to meeting their deductible? Can you do that yet?
Like in building logic, come out like the hospital logic, the answer is yes. I mean, we have access to that information. And yeah, I feel like you must have hacked in on Dan and I's last call because we were talking about this very issue. And, you know, there is the, sometimes they lose sight of the benefit and like people no longer want a software because it's something they want that doesn't even exist in the industry. Yeah, and it's like totally they're losing sight of the benefit for the want more and more. One of the things I can say from our standpoint, our roadmap is jam packed with I'm that way. Like that's how I am as a creator and founder. I'm like, I know we can do this for optometry. I know we can do that. So like we are nowhere close to being done, but sometimes we do lose sight of what the value is in and of itself without wanting more and more and more.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I want to ask you kind of a one or two more follow-up questions to that. I think the, have you actually calculated, like, I'm sure you guys have run numbers like, all right, the value proposition that we offer to a practice is like, you're going to spend this much a month. I don't know what it is, but it's not really important. What's important is you probably know if I'm spending X amount per month with your software, what is the return on that? The most common questions I get include, what ophthalmological codes or evaluation and management codes should I use? What ICD-10 codes do I need to bill with this CPT code? What CPT codes can be billed together and what can't? And my favorite, how do I manage a patient who has diabetes who comes in for a quote-unquote routine eye exam? These questions really highlight the confusion and uncertainty that serves as a daunting hurdle for providers, makes it more challenging for them to care for their patients and provide those patients with the best opportunity for a lifetime of ocular health and clear vision. That's why we built iCode Education, for this specific purpose. Our mission is to provide optometrists with resources to help you understand disease states, revenue cycles, and billing and coding so that you can put that on autopilot and truly care for your patients. Check out iCodeEducation.com. That's E-Y-E-C-O-D-E education.com. We've developed a premier billing and coding bundle that includes all of our billing and coding resources in one place. We also have a 10% discount code just for listeners of this podcast. Enter the coupon code EYECODEMEDIA22 at checkout. We'd love to work with you. Check out iCodeEducation.com. We've been partnering with EssilorLuxottica 360 for a while now, and it helps us in three areas. First, they use social media campaigns to highlight products that we believe in and prescribe to our patients, and they deliver those patients back to our practice. Second, EssilorLuxottica 360 enhances our patient experience through staff training tools that help us simplify and streamline the way we communicate about our products and services. Lastly, but for my practice most importantly, it helps us make good business decisions related to our optical offerings. We will systematically and objectively analyze what our patients are purchasing and what they like, and removing products that our patients are not really using or not really drawn to. This, along with additional rebates and immediate savings, helps us continue to deliver high-quality products and services to our patients and keeps our practice resilient. Check out EssilorLuxottica 360 for yourself by visiting EssilorLuxottica360.com.
One thing I'll give an easy one. I'll let Dan talk to some of the value props, but we talked about finding additional plan in 5 to 10% of cases. Let's say we find one additional patient a month that you maximize those benefits. The software's free. And sometimes they lose sight of that. Like there's so many of these different ways where I'm like, I can save you 100 hours in staff time. I can save you $5 to $10 almost on every order of lost revenue that you weren't collecting. But I don't even want to like make big. I'm saying if we can find you one additional patient a month that you maximize the benefits, it's free. Like those are the things, like sometimes we get too in the weeds, and I'm the same way. It must be an optometrist thing that we tend to do. I'll let Dan talk to some of the things, but I do want to highlight some things.
Yeah.
It's very simple to say, if we can get you one a month, it's free. Like there's your value, but go ahead, Dan, you can talk to more on some of these things.
Yeah, it's actually funny. It's like, I know we were in a different room, but it's like you were literally took the words out of our mouth from about 10 minutes before we started. It's wild to start both of us laughing hysterically. But no, like there's not just one benefit. Like, it compounds. So when people miss the bigger picture, they're missing things like what Nate talked about, finding one additional patient. But at the same time, like, we're also pulling all the dependents off of a primary. Like, you have the ability to turn one appointment into three or four. Like, if it's my family, like, I could bring my wife and my two kids in with me. And at the same time, there's four possible chances to sell a pair of frames to somebody that you will, 2 weeks ago, might have been just one. But then also, it's smaller things around the office. Like, instead of spending 10 minutes per patient to find insurance, it's two. It's a minute, whatever it is. It's already loaded. You're talking about 8 to 10 minutes per patient. You're reducing from staff time that they can work on something else around the office, like patient experience, making sure billing's done right, name it, like, just keep going down. They could be doing other things. But then it gets as small as, like, let's think about how many snapshots are printing off every single day. Paper's not getting cheaper. Ink's not getting cheaper. Like, I could literally just make the benefit of PracticePal for just reducing the cost of paper. I've done it on my board behind me here several times with my people here. It's like, you have to think about not just the big things, but all the small things too, like paper, folders, upload time into your EHR. All that stuff compounds. And why me and Nate were laughing is because there's so many people that miss the bigger picture when they're putting something like this in place. But then obviously
just making your people's life better. Like, just making
that too,
like patients are primary, right? But just making the team that you have around you, their life simpler. Like, yep. What is that worth? You know, what is that worth in terms of, like, their ability to feel like they're working for a company that is easy to work with, that integrates new tools and technology and ups their game, helps them up their game. Yep. I mean, post COVID, that those kinds of things that are intangible, are a big deal.
Well, and we talked about it too a little while ago about training new people. You know, what's easier, training them to go to six different portals to find one line, or go into PracticePal and look right in this one spot? And like, your training time decreases, your mistakes decrease. But then at the end of the line, on the optical side, your billing mistakes decrease. You're charging the right amount. You're having an overall better patient experience, which we've talked about a lot. But you're also having a better employee experience. So your turnover is going to be less, and you're training people better, and you're just running a better practice. But then the whole thing comes with, you know, change is hard. You have to have people that are willing to do it.
Is there one thing? So I'll be respectful of your time. Is there one thing, like, if you think, look, if the practices can get over this one hurdle, it's like done. Have we talked about all of those things?
Dan's talked about it, but to just directly say, it's because PracticePal, and when we're talking about automating copay calculations and using a sales tool to take them through the sales process, this is new. It doesn't exist in our industry, and it is changing behavior from using a calculator, a pad and paper. Even though we're making their life more efficient, it's still a change of behavior. And sometimes they just want to stick to what's comfortable. So if we give people to out of the gates to utilize it and adopt it, they never want to go back. But we've all been there, even in switching an EHR. For that first couple weeks, I wanted to throw my computer out the door. But then once you get used to it, you know you couldn't go without it. So it's more, the biggest hurdle is, and this is a tough part from our industry, of doctors are the ones that sign up like you. You're like, hey, this is a great idea. This is great. But it's only as good as your willingness to make sure the staff adopt and change behaviors. And it's easier said than done. I've been there and saying, I want you to do this. And they kind of fight their way through it. But I mean, at the end of the day, we can't let staff dictate how we run a business. Like, if we know that the business is going to be better, the patient experience is going to be better, which ultimately the better business is, the more you can pay your employees, value your employees, things of that nature, it's worth it, even though if there's initial friction in changing those behaviors. And that is the largest one, is just getting that comfort factor with changing behaviors.
Yeah. And I think, and that comes back to, like, identity. I've talked a lot about identity recently. And, you know, if right now our identity is being clouded by, I'm just trying to whittle through paperwork so that I can just get this patient out of here as fast as I can. That's not what we're built for. It's not what any of us went to school for. It's not why we get up in the morning. So any ability that we can kind of help ourselves get back to making sure our identity is what we're, what our purpose is, and letting the other tools and technology and people around us to do the things that, that they are best at and that, that they identify with, will reinforce those other behaviors and those other processes that we develop around those things so that we can, keep taking care of patients. So fellas, thanks so much for being on today. Where can people reach out to you? How can they find you?
Go ahead, Nate.
Go for it, Dan. Yes.
It's my turn now. Okay. Yeah.
You can come to iCodeEducation.com. No, I'm just kidding.
There, you go start.
You guys are. Go ahead. Dan, where can people find you?
You can either shoot me an email directly, dan@reviewwave.com. I'm always happy to answer any questions people have. For a lot more information, you go to reviewwave.com. There's a whole optometry section there to tell you everything that we do. Practice Pal is part of a bigger company called ReviewWave, and we have a full optometry team that's built just to help all the doctors here that are listening.
Yeah, awesome. And a quick segue to that is big picture thing of roadmap and where we want to go. As a doctor, one of the things our industry needs, because there are good tech solutions out there, but it's just one more place to go. It's one more, like you talked about, one more solution to sign up for, and that could become overwhelming. And where our industry needs to go is to more all-in-one solutions, where we can provide a lot of these functions that exist, but unify those. And that's something what I feel our industry greatly needs, and something we're going to work very hard to create to help docs from that standpoint.
It's a great aspiration, and I look forward to seeing you guys do it. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Wolf. We appreciate you.